Hello.
My name is Jiří Kosina. I'm working as a kernel engineer in SUSE Labs. Also, I'm leading a core kernel team there. And also, I'm an upstream maintainer of the live patching infrastructure in the Linux kernel, because that's what we have been quite heavily involved with in the past few years. And I would like to give you a brief update regarding where we currently are, what are the challenges, what are the missing features, what is the motivation at all for doing the live patching. So this is what we will be basically talking about in the next 45 minutes. The first is why. That's basically the question that appears each and every time, for example, where there was the first LWN article published on live patching. And the first few questions that appeared in the comments always were, why do we even need it? Because patching the kernel and rebooting is for free. So there are some numbers from analysts, and actually not only that, but we have been receiving a lot of feedback and requests from our customers that basically the problem they have whenever there is a security issue, which is a typical use case, is that rebooting the whole data center, they can do it without the disruption, but they need to have it planned in advance. And that's not always possible if there is a zero-day exploit that comes out. And they had to plan the data center outage or reboot of all the servers basically many months in advance. So that's exactly where the live patching comes to play. And it's also on this topic it's important to mention that exactly because of that and because of the technical limitations, it's really intended for small security limited fixes which are self-contained. It's definitely not possible currently, and it will never be, to basically exchange the whole kernel in a non-disruptive way. Yep. Sure, that's... So that's the response to the really reappearing question of why do we need it at all. That's basically what I have just explained. The third thing is... There will always be patches which are not possible to be done in a live patching way, and that they're basically the scheduled downtime and reboot of everything is always going to be the necessary step to take. I'd like to briefly tell you what the whole history that led us to where we are now is, because it's quite important to actually understand also some technical decisions and the implementation that we have currently in the kernel, why it looks the way it is. Actually, these two ladies are probably performing the first documented live patching in the computer science. I don't know how many of you have read Richard Feynman's book, Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman. It's basically, Richard Feynman is a Nobel Prize physicist who has been working on Project Manhattan, the atomic bomb during the Second World War. And in this book, he actually describes, and he was also responsible for a computing center, which looked like this back then. And he basically describes the way how he designed grouping the punch cards. So the machines were programmed on punch cards, grouping the punch cards and coloring them in different ways, so that he's then able, whenever it turns out that there's a bug on the punch card, that makes it possible to actually exchange only a small subset of the punch cards in a non-disruptive way for the rest of the computation that's running on the rest of the cluster, basically. So that's in principle already the beginning of the live patching as we are doing it today, also in a really fancy way. More recent history, the first implementation for the Linux kernel that at least is known to me, or something that could be called live patching, was a project called K-Splice. It was a university project. I think it was a one-man project. The person basically did the PhD, received the PhD for the K-Splice implementation. And it used a mechanism where the kernel actually, it wasn't really 100% live patching, because the kernel basically, whenever it needed to make a change to the code of the running kernel, it called stop machine, which basically means that all the CPUs enter a well-defined state where they are just cycling in a loop and doing nothing else. And then the infrastructure, the K-Splice implementation, basically inspected all the CPUs, all the processes, not all the CPUs, sorry, all the processes which are there on the system to see whether the patch that is going to be applied, the change of the code, might actually interfere with any of the processes that exist on the system. Basically, it looked at the stack trace of all the sleeping processes, and if the function that was to be patched was found on any of the stacks of either of the process, it basically refused to patch the function because it considered it too dangerous, and basically retried later. What's really nice, and I think that was basically one of the contributions, and one of the major contributions was the way how they generate, how K-Splice guys were generating the patches. So basically, what they did is they compiled the kernel, like the original kernel, then they applied the source code level patch, like the normal patch we have for the bug, the fix. They recompiled the kernel and they did comparing of the resulting binary objects to know which functions are actually, at the end of the day, influenced by the patch. Because there are a lot of things how basically the influence of the you make a one-liner to one function, but that doesn't mean that just that one function is actually, at the end of the day, in the final object file, influenced by the patch, because you have inlining. GCC is able to do all kinds of crazy optimizations, like unifying the functions which it considers to be the same, for example. So it basically throws away some of the functions which just return zero, and so on. So it was really nice, but it has its problems as well. And what's even worse, at least for us, is that the K-Splice project has been acquired in 2011 by Oracle. And basically closed down. So there are still the last version is still available under GPL somewhere, but it's completely outdated and it's basically unusable for the current kernel. And Oracle is actually is commercially supporting and deploying patches for their Linux distribution using the K-Splice technology. Because, as I said at the beginning, we have been receiving a lot of requests from our customers that they really would like to have the live patching functionality available. So we started to prototyping, coming up with the design first, then prototyping the implementation. And in 2014, we actually came up with something we called K-Graft. And I think a month after, or maybe even 2 weeks after, Red Hat guys actually announced K-Patch. Those two are in principle different in a way how they achieve the convergence to the patched system. K-Patch was pretty much similar in nature to the K-Splice approach. So it also looked at a snapshot at a certain point of time at all the processes, decide whether it's safe to apply the patch or not. While our the K-Graft solution was quite different, it basically applied the patch to the running system without stopping it at all, in a lazy manner, so to say. So it basically it takes milliseconds or maximum seconds, depending on how long sleeping processes you have, to actually slowly migrate all the processes you have on the system to actually use the new patched code and not use the old one, which supposedly contains some security issues. Sometime between 2014 and 2015, we actually started already a commercial support for this, like via SUSE. And by that, we actually violated one of our principles, which we have, which is upstream first. But we really wanted, because the demand from the customers was so high and we really had the technology ready, so we started to basically support it, and then decided to have it merged, or attempt to have it merged in some form later afterwards. In addition to the lazy convergence or lazy migration, we also have manual patch creation, which we believe has a lot of advantages compared to the binary generation, because actually, even if you do the binary generation of the patch, then you still have to review whether the changes you are doing by the patch are applicable in a live patching way. Because, for example, if you are patching a structure, you would then have to basically find all the instances of a structure in memory and make some manual transformation, for example. It's not as simple as just flipping the bit, even if you have the patch pre-generated. That's why we decided to actually not go this way directly, but we are currently heading towards sort of a hybrid solution, so that we are writing the patches in a manual way, but with a lot of help of tooling, which currently, I will be talking about that later. The tooling still has to be created, basically, but yeah. Okay, I think, yeah, this is basically a side note. There is another alternative approach that has been for some time basically pushed by the Creo folks. And it's different, but I still want to mention it because at the end of the day, it might be suitable for some use cases. And it's based on checkpoint restart functionality, Creo. I'm pretty sure you are familiar with the technology. And the basic approach is that basically you, at the time you want to patch the kernel, you checkpoint the whole user space you have, then you k-exec to the completely new kernel. So this is basically, this allows you for having much more sophisticated fixes present in the patch. Actually, you can basically completely change to a new kernel. And then after the kernel boots, you just restore the user space from the checkpointed state you have. This is a lot of issues. First issue is that basically all your hardware gets reinitialized during the patching, which might be very, very not wanted side effect. And also, I'm not sure, but a few years ago when we were looking around for solutions, Creo wasn't really 100% reliable when it comes to restoring the checkpointed user space, especially across when you would k-exec completely new kernel version. So basically, this solution, currently I'm pretty sure Creo works already, but this only removes the BIOS boot time from the picture, but otherwise it's basically reboot and restore the whole user space. I have been talking about how our K-Graft solution was different from the stop machine inspect stacks and decide whether to patch or not. This is the picture where I try to explain a little bit more how the lazy migration works. So you can see the user space kernel space boundary. That's basically a syscall boundary where the user space calls a syscall and enters the kernel. And at that point, we basically, when the process enters the kernel, we basically say him welcome to the new universe, and all the further code the process is executing in the kernel context already is the new one provided by the patch. And the same happens to the process which leaves the kernel. So we just set the flag at the per process flag telling yes, this process has been migrated, and when it comes to syscall for a second time later, it will already use new patch code. So basically, only the processes which have been inside the kernel, so running in the kernel context at the time when the patch application process started, are still running the old code. So basically, the thing we wanted to avoid is a process running one session through the kernel context and mixing new and old functions in one run through the kernel. That has really high potential for inconsistencies. So basically, there is a trampoline function which decides per process whether the process is already OK to call a new function or it's still getting redirected. And basically, we are waiting for it to exit the kernel. There are several problems with that, but they are rather easy to solve. First problem, obviously, are k-threads, because k-threads never actually exit the kernel. So there is no crossing the boundary. So currently, we are manually annotating k-threads, like inserting a save point. Surprisingly, it's not that bad. It's really doable. And once you do it, porting this annotation to newer kernel is easier. And the other problem is long sleeping processes. Basically, for example, getTTY is a good example. Usually, getTTY is just sleeping on a terminal for days, waiting for someone to log in, and no one logins. So it's just there. And basically means that it also never leaves the kernel. What we have implemented to solve this problem was that we basically, for such a long sleeping process, we detect them and we send them a fake signal. So it's not a real signal, like we don't kill them or we don't send user one, because that would mean that the process might get really confused. But we basically just wake the process up at the point when it would be leaving the kernel. It just goes to sleep again. And it works pretty well, actually, as well. Okay, so at 2014, we had basically two different solutions to the same problem, one from Red Hat, KPatch, one from us, KGraph. So we agreed to do a session at, well, Miniconf, live patching Miniconf at 2015 Plumbers Conference in Düsseldorf. We basically sat together and presented our technical solutions and discussed together in the group what would be the best way forward. And we basically, the immediate agreement was that we would try to join the forces and attempt to have just one unified solution merged to the upstream kernel. And we basically agreed on exact steps how we would do it. So start with a very minimalistic implementation, which was basically just the API for the function redirection. So we are basically users of the ftrace infrastructure. So we just built on top of the ftrace infrastructure a rather simple API that allowed to register a live patch, which basically means a bunch of functions that needs to be replaced. We introduced the user space API, which you can look at the patches you have applied, revert them by writing to SysFS, and so on. And that was pretty much it. And that was the first very basic version that has very limited set of patches that can be applied with it, because it doesn't contain any consistency checking whatsoever, any consistency guarantees whatsoever. It doesn't allow you to do any post-processing on the once the patch is applied and so on. Very basic infrastructure. That has been merged into Linux 3 in February. I think that's wrong. It should be 2015, I think. 2016. Doesn't matter. We got it merged. And then basically we started cherry-picking the feature, but not really cherry-picking on the code level, but on the basic ideas from the both implementations, and converging to one solution that would be actually as strong as the individual solutions we have, strong in a sense of the groups or the groups of the patches you are able to apply. So it's in upstream kernel currently. It's hidden behind config live patch. It's combined consistency model of KGraph and KPatch, which means lazy migration is used by default. And stack examination is a fallback for long sleeping processes, which has a nice benefit that basically when there are long sleeping processes or K-threads were the problem in our solution as well, we basically just see that they didn't get migrated. We just look at the stacks of the few chosen processes which are blocking the finalization of the patching. And if we decide it's actually okay, the patching can be finalized pretty easily. So this really made the convergence to the patch state really quick. And currently we are, so original implementation, of course, as always, was for x86 only. And we are currently extending the architecture support for S390. It's already there, PowerPC 64 is already there, and ARM 64 is in the works currently. Basically in parallel to this, or motivated by our needs, Josh Poimbo from Red Hat, who is the guy who is also working on the live patching infrastructure on the Red Hat side, basically started, because as you see, the stack examination is a crucial point of, without really reliable stack examination, we can't provide consistency, right? Because we really do rely on looking at the stack and deciding on the way whether we are actually able to consistently apply patch or not. So we really need to have consistent stack traces. So no stack traces with the question marks all over the place, but really reliable stack traces. Like if you see a stack trace, you can be 100% sure that it's actual stack trace and it's the actual trace that led to the place where the process is currently sleeping. That led to creation A of the object tool, which basically, and it's currently merged also in the Linux 3, and it's a part of the build system, which basically checks whether all, especially handwritten assembly code, is written in a way that it would always produce a correct stack trace. And then the second problem was that, for example, Red Hat, I know that Red Hat actually has a frame pointer enabled in their enterprise kernels, but we don't in our enterprise kernels because in our measurements, actually, it turned out to cause up to 10% performance degradation for some benchmarks. So we decided not, sorry? x86, 64.
Really?
Yes, it was really surprising. Mel Gorman has some explanation, but not really, he's not really sure about it either.
I've seen about 3%, 4%,
I haven't
seen
10%. Yeah, we've seen, like, the average, the median basically was 9%. The standard deviation was pretty high. Yeah, it was like, if you looked at the benchmark, but the average was around 9. It was really high. It's really surprising. It's basically just the single memory access of pushing. Yeah, sure. It was Mel Gorman measuring it, so it was really consistent. But yeah, the number was, he was pretty sure about the number. So we are not enabling it because our performance team doesn't allow us to do that, basically. And Josh, actually, so basically, if you want a nice stack trace from the kernel, you either have to have frame pointer, which is then easy to unwind and walk back all the chain on the stack to see what exactly the sequence of the calls led to the current state. Or you need a dwarf data, which is a debug info that GCC generates. We used to have a dwarf unwinder, a dwarf stack unwinder in the kernel, but it has been killed in 2014, I think, because there were multiple issues with that. It cost, basically, you don't want to have a stack trace unwinder that crashes your machine. You really want to have reliable stack unwinding, and it was also really slow. And also, the person who has been maintaining it was really not cooperating and refusing to fix or to admit that the unwinder is actually able to crash the machine. So it has been dropped, which basically led us with the only frame pointer being the only way how to get the reliable stack trace. Josh actually implemented Orc unwinder, which is basically really, really trimmed down or stripped down version of the debug info generated by GCC, but it's actually not. It really is generating only the information we need for the proper stack unwinding and nothing else. So the state machine, I don't know who of you is actually familiar with the dwarf format, but the state machine that was in the kernel for unwinding, just unwinding the stack, was huge. It was like monstrous state machine because the dwarf format is so big and it's able to describe basically the whole source code and provide you all the debug info that you need. But it's too much. We don't need that for stack unwinding. So basically, Orc really includes only the information. So basically, the addresses of the frame pointers and a few more addresses. And that's exactly what's needed for proper reliable stack unwinding and nothing more. That's currently also merged. So it will be in 4.14, I think it's not in 4.13, but for 4.14 it has been merged. So you can actually enable this unwinding. And once you enable that, it's being used for all the stack dumping. So if you get a oops or panic or warning and there is a stack trace, it will use also this new unwinder. So you can get reliable stack traces. Currently x86, 64 only. We are working, currently the SUSE guy is working on extending this to PowerPC 64, and we also have a person who started just 2 or 3 weeks ago looking into ARM 64. It basically means that ObjectTool has to be ported to that architecture, and the Orc Unwinder then is rather easy, but the ObjectTool needs to be ported first, and that's not that easy, because you basically need either instruction decoder, because you need to actually verify that the generated code is able to produce proper stack traces and issue warning for code which is not. So it's not trivial, it's not completely trivial, but extending it is on a plate, definitely. I've mentioned patch generation. So for the upstream solution, we agreed on the manual handwritten patches currently. And we agreed that we'll be producing as much tooling as possible to make the life of the patch creator easier. The source of the patch is basically a single C file.
which means you can version track it in Git, you can review it as a normal code. And the way you basically create a patch, you just put a new versions of the functions you want to be present in the kernel image, create a list of the functions that you want to be replaced by these new functions, issue of two simple calls to the live patching API, compile it as a normal kernel module, insert it, and it's done. If we have time at the end of the session, I can show you a small demo, but it's really as easy as that. So basically, if you take small source level patch like this, so basically this is a function, if you do cat proc command line, this is the code that gets executed. So if you would want, for some reason, not to print it the actual kernel command line, but some hello world message, the patch would look like this. And you would have to recompile the kernel or reboot, and then the proc command line would start behaving the way you want it. And this is the live patch that basically does that in runtime for you. So as you can see, is there a point? No, okay, never mind. So as you can see, you basically provide at the beginning, that's the re-implementation, the implementation of the new function, so the fixed function. Then you have the name of the old function you want to replace and the name of the function in the structure. You can have multiple such functions there. And the live patching infrastructure basically makes sure that it's flipped in a consistent way atomically. So it's not like it's really, even if you have a group of a set of functions there, they are consistently switched over to the new versions in the way you would expect. And then there's some boilerplate, and then you see at the end register patch and enable patch, and that's it. Once the live patch init function, which is the module init function, finishes, you are running a patch kernel. Now it all looked really easy. It's not actually a nice and done and completed. It's not the way. So as I mentioned, we have a lot of limitations and missing features which we are currently working on. Inability to deal with patches that change the data structures or actually semantics of the data is the biggest issue probably. For patches which just, for example, add a new field to a structure, we might have a solution. Currently, it's being reviewed, where you basically create a shadow entity in the memory, shadow structure in the memory with the extra field added, and you associate that structure with the old structure, and then you have a simple API how to actually access the new fields. It has limited usage because not always you can use that, but at least some patches can be applied using this. So this is currently being reviewed. I believe 4.15 probably will have it. That's the shadow variables. That's basically a combination of the two ideas marked there. So basically, we introduce the shadow structure in the memory, and then a new code, as the convergence into a patched system basically progresses, the new code actually is able to use the edit field to the structure. The problem really is, if it's not just an edit field that the new code should start looking at, but if in case some of the, for example, a field in a structure completely changes semantics, it's not really easy to do. Or if you remove or you completely reshuffle the structure and reshuffle the locking around it, that's currently thing that still needs to be sorted out how to deal with. That's also the second point. Exclusive access mechanisms basically means if you are changing a locking rules, that's also a very hard problem, right? Because you don't know, doing that without introducing an immediate deadlock is hard, because you don't know who currently has the locks acquired. So if you all of a sudden change locking rules, you might introduce an immediate lock and so on. So that's also not a solved problem, and I'm not sure whether we would be able to solve it ever. Patch callbacks are mentioned there. So that's basically also a feature which we are currently working on. And it allows you to have a callback registered which gets called by the live patching infrastructure at certain well-defined points of the patching. So when the patching starts, when the patching is about to finish, and you can do fix-ups in a memory. For example, if you know that you need to send a signal to init or whatever. Basically, it's a callback there for the patch author at certain points in time to actually provide him with as many tools as possible to make the patch work. The limitations or the missing feature of the problem also is, well, the patch author writes a patch, but we have currently no means how to make really sure, like programmatically, algorithmically, sure that the change is still within the consistency model, so whether it actually is according all the rules we have that make sure that the patch application can be done in a consistent way. There are a lot of traps like that, actually. So, for example, if you consider static variable inside a function, it's very easy to miss. So you introduce a new function where you think you implemented the new fixed function, but basically the old static variable, there's just one static variable, right? And that's still contained in the old function. So basically static variable on a local scope is a global variable. And you just introduce the new one, which are not connected. And things like that really have to be really carefully reviewed by the patch author. We have started to write a patch author guide where we basically list all the rules and all the good manners, basically all things to watch for the patch author has to look after. Patch creation tooling, there's a lot of work currently happening in that area because the primary problem, as I've mentioned, patches are generally affected by combinatorial explosion, which means that if GCC is very happy to inline functions, and it does that a lot. So that means if you have patched a function which has been inlined to a million of functions, that actually means you have to patch all the millions of functions that the buggy function has been inlined to. And you really want some tooling to help you with that, so that you don't actually have to become crazy by re-implementing a million of functions. Also, funny thing is this IPARA, IPARA option to GCC that basically allows GCC to perform an optimization that breaks the x86 ABI calling convention. Because if GCC is reasonably sure that no one else is able to call a certain function, like it's static in a single C file, it knows that no one is able to take an address pointer to it, and it actually is able to track all the callers, it can completely modify the ABI, and it does. And that's a problem because if we actually then want to patch that function, we basically have to cope with the ABI, which is there, right? Or at least be aware of the problem and deal with it somehow. But we have to know that GCC decided to break x86 ABI calling convention for that function. So currently, how we deal with that, we just don't use that option to GCC, which is sad because it's very nice optimization. It saves registers and basically makes the whole thing a lot faster. That's life. Sometimes we do have to do quite a heavy K all sims lookup to be able to find all the symbols we work with. And we try to get rid of that because that's not really... So if you have a multiple functions of the same name in the kernel, that it's really difficult to distinguish which one you actually, or not functions, but symbols, which one to work with. So we basically want to move more towards using proper ELF relocations. So basically partially re-implementing linker for that would suit our needs for live patches. And yeah, there are a lot of tools and a lot of basically ways how to generate the patches. So the first manual using kbuild, like building the proper KO, the module, from the real actual handwritten source. There's ASM tool written by Jörg, he's sitting right there, which is basically able to, which is similar in nature to what kpatch did on the object level, but it's doing it on assembly level, comparing and being able to transfer blocks of assembly code to the new object. So it's still much easier to review than just having a generated blob and not knowing what's in there. So that's also one of the tools that's currently on the horizon. And the KLP convert and kpatch build are basically the other options. Kpatch build is the object level one, and KLP convert is the one where it's actually trying to generate proper relocations into the ELF file so that we don't have to abuse K all sims. Another problem which is there are kprobes. So basically, consider a situation when you are about to patch a function which has a kprobe installed on it, and then the kprobe is lost forever, and you don't know why. Because it's not possible to actually transfer it automatically to a new function, so you have no idea at to which point in the function to transfer the kprobe to, because the new function might be really different. Depends on how much surgery the patch actually does to the function code. And yeah, what we need to do is extend the arc coverage. So basically, that means implement ftrace with regs for the particular architecture if it's missing there, port object tool, and port the reliable stack outwinding. And then once these first two are done, then the porting, the actual live patching is rather easy, because that's a really small glue code which is architecture specific, and that's it. The inability to patch handwritten assembly is a small problem, but it's currently there. No one has yet started to tackle it, so because ftrace is actually not aware of the handwritten assembly functions, right? So we are not able to patch them currently. And also the thing so the first one is rather easy to fix, the other one is much more difficult. So it turns out there are people who started working on user space live patching, the user space processes, and it turns out it's much more difficult problem, surprisingly, than patching the kernel, because user space is wild forest, and you have no idea which compiler has been used. There are a lot of libraries. There is basically no single like checkpoint which we have in the kernel, which is the kernel user space boundary. There's nothing like that, and it's really much more difficult. So there are some projects which are there, but I'm not really familiar with them too much, but it's happening. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Thanks a lot. Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Masami? Let me try this.
So there, how the so K patch, live patch, actually that are handling that K all seems, so that a new function is has a new name, or the it replaces the name in a K all seems list.
No. The new functions have the new name. They are prefixed basically by usually kpatch or kgraph or klp prefix, then probably some number, because we already have seen cases where you need to patch one function multiple times because it turns out that there is another problem. So we are basically versioning the names in the name of the symbol. But the old symbol still stays there because you actually want to be able to revert eventually to the old kernel. So yeah, the function, the symbol, and even the whole function stays there in the memory. And it's just not being called by anybody.
But in that case, it's a kind of adding that some module and adding some new function. So I think that we don't need to translate that kprobes the point to from the old function to the new function, because that it's just adding that the new symbols. So that the user can put the new kprobes on that.
I agree. Yeah, it's not a problem that can't be solved. The problem is that it might be confusing to the user, who maybe he doesn't even know that the function has been patched, because he's receiving patches from the distribution vendor, right? They're just flowing in, installing new patches, yeah, right? And then I want to insert, and he has a kprobe on the function for past 2 weeks, and all of a sudden the kprobe stops working, and he has no idea why.
Okay. Could you make a callback handler live patch, so that kprobes can detect that function is already patched or not, so that we can find that the kprobes and mark it as a gone or light patch.
Yeah, so I think what you are suggesting is, I actually already have, I have written code which did, and I'm not sure whether I sent it to you or not yet, which basically does, when we are installing a patch, we actually inspect all the existing K probes and see whether any K probe which is actually existing fits into the function we patching.
Yeah, actually, that will be done by your K probes or any other subsystems like alternatives or something like that. Register the callbacks into the LivePatch subsystem, and just a LivePatch just calls those callbacks when patching that kernel function.
And what would the callback do?
So that the callbacks just call the callbacks with the which function will be LivePatched. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I see. And then the K probes would actually be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Check that. Yeah.
Thank you. Any more questions? There is a question.
Yeah. Does it work actually along with kernel address space randomization?
Yes, it does.
And another one, basically the kernel modules. Does it include actual kind of work with the kernel modules as well?
So you mean if you are able to patch kernel modules?
Yeah.
Yes, we are. And actually, I didn't have it on the slides. That's a very good question because it's actually not an easy problem to solve. Because you might have patches which are actually intended for modules which are not loaded at the time you are applying the patch. So what we have is, and we've had that discussion last year, I think. So there are basically two options how to deal with that. Either you patch the on-disk version of the module and then make sure that once it gets loaded, it's actually patched. Or you actually use the module notifier, and before the module gets activated, you actually live patch it and then activate it. And that's what we are currently doing for a lot of reasons. Yeah, but okay, we are handling that.
Can IRQ handlers being patched or just kthread?
Sorry, say again.
Can IRQ handler being patched or just kthread?
Yes, they can be patched. We have a code for that and it works.
Back into the model, have you thinking about how to solve the model signing facility that has the kernel?
Model signing?
Exactly.
And what exactly is the problem?
Well, if I sign a model and maybe I drop the signature, so how can I live patch in that?
And so basically, I'm not sure I understand the question. So the live patches are normal kernel modules which also have to be signed if your kernel is configured to verify signatures on a module. And if you, you are proposing, if I understand correctly, that if we are patching a module that's basically coming, we don't do anything. We basically first verify the signature, and the patching is done only afterwards. So that's the way it's currently implemented. We are basically that our handler is way after the module checking happens. So we modify the code in memory, basically. So we do check that the signature of the coming module still applies to the module that comes from the disk so that it's actually the right module, and only then the transformation on the in-memory code is done. So that's how it currently works, and I think it doesn't really impose any security problem because the change that is being done to the module is done by a signed module as well. So it's exactly. Basically both parties are trusted by the kernel.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. If that's it, we don't have any more time for the demo. So thank you.